Hello, you're listening to Laser Graves, a podcast where we dig up movies, music, books, and events from the 80s and discuss how rad they were. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Laser Graves. I'm your co-host, E.K. Wimmer.
Hi. Hi, E.K. Wimmer.
Hey.
Welcome to your podcast. I'm your co-host.
What?
Well, it's ours.
Yeah.
But also yours.
Okay.
I'm here too.
Okay. What's your name?
Oh, hey. My name is Mariah Rose Wimmer. You should know that.
Wow. We're off to a great start. We're pulling a double duty this week.
Gross.
We're not dropping a double duty.
Better flush.
We're just pulling it around in a car, a little red wagon. So this week, we decided to cram two in because we had gotten a little behind and we're usually one ahead.
Wait, you're cramming
two double duties into
okay,
a
I'll
little
stop.
Wagon.
I'll stop.
But this, we got a little overambitious for because we read a book. We were going to do a book review, but it was adapted to a major movie. And then we thought, oh, let's do both of them in one, mm-hmm. which we'll do. So bear with us. This is also the episode in which Mariah decided to not take any notes.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to like freeform it. I'm like moving my shoulders loosey-goosey to show you. Well, I had my people carry me in on a litter.
Like on the back, Prince Ali on the back of a like yep. giant elephant.
This is how I travel now because I'm Lord of the Dogs.
Any thrift store finds?
Yes, but it wasn't very exciting. Just some stuff for the backyard because I'm jazzing it up.
He had some boring stuff like a Pyrex bowl.
It was a water bowl for the dogs out back.
Oh.
I got a glass bowl so that it would maybe not absorb the New Mexico heat.
Oh, I thought you were just trying to be like mid-century water bowl.
Nope. Just trying to keep it less hot.
Okay. I had one find. I had a couple finds today, but a really good one.
What?
I found a copy of Repo Man on VHS and... also a copy of Return of the Killer Tomatoes, which I think has George Clooney in it. And both of them I was very excited about. And when I put them up on the counter, she said, that'll be 37 cents. And I was like, cha-ching. And that made my day. So
it would have been
my
cool.
Find.
Did you pay in 37 pennies?
No, I paid in a big smile and a cha-ching sound.
Oh, did you actually say cha-ching to another human besides me?
No, there was a guy with a fedora on. I looked at him. I grabbed his fedora. I put it on me, tilted it, did a little spin, and yelled cha-ching.
Okay.
Well, you wanted to know.
You know what you also did today?
What?
At the flea market? You're spotting something from a distance, but you lowered your sunglasses and like did the boing-oing eyes.
No, I didn't do the like. What is it? The like?
Wow, wow.
Roger Rabbit. I didn't do that. I did. It was in the shade, and I had my sunglasses on, and you can't see things in the shade with sunglasses.
Nope.
Okay, agree to disagree. So this week we are covering two Stephen King items.
Items?
I guess that's how you'd say it. Well, so this is our first Stephen King episode, right?
Okay.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, we're getting so far in that we can't even remember.
Don't even know.
That's pretty cool.
What have we covered? I don't know.
I don't know. Don't care.
Only remember or wait till Helen comes.
Which was originally written by Stephen King.
No.
This week we are covering a book which is called Cycle of the Werewolf from 1983. It's a novella, really.
Yeah, and it's all about werewolf menstruation.
Yeah, and its relationship to the moon.
Exactly.
And it's a really unique Stephen King book. It's one of the few. I read a few when I was a kid. My mom was a big Stephen King fan. She still has all the original, like, first presses in her room, and I know they'll go to me, but I used to, kind of what our daughter does with me now, she'll go into our space and see our books and be like, can I read that? She's doing that with Goosebumps now, mm-hmm. which is really cool.
She doesn't want to read any of my books.
No, like Marie Kondo. And so I used to go into my mom's room and look through her Stephen King books and just look at the covers, read the backs, like what our daughter does with our books. And I found Cycle the Werewolf. It was a short one, but it was also really cool. I love the title. And it's unique because it's kind of, it's an illustrated book.
It's like a graphic novel.
Yeah, it's kind of like a graphic novel. Each chapter has three illustrations. They're really, really cool.
Was it called a novelette instead of a novella?
No, it was a novella.
Because I thought I saw on the other thing that it was called a novelette.
No, I don't think so. But, so that was in 83, and then it was adapted to the major motion picture, which most of us know, Silver Bullet, with Corey Haim mm-hmm. and Gary Busey and all kinds of people. So I had the thought, I pitched it to you, of we were just going to do the book, mm-hmm. and I said, well, what if we did a double episode where we covered both of them? And you said, that's great, let's watch the movie, and then you didn't make it through the movie. You pulled a classic Mariah and just fell asleep.
Well.
And I said, well, if you're not taking notes, you at least have to watch the movie.
Just so, tell me how it goes.
So we finished it up tonight.
I read the book.
Just finished it, and now we are going to discuss it all.
Well, we had a conversation last night where I was starting to doze. It was rather late for me. And I said, it's either you watch this and I pretend I'm awake until I can't hide it anymore, or we just finish it the next day. And that's what we did, and it worked out well. Because here we are, and I watched it bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
That's right. Definitely bushy-tailed.
What?
And we are going to discuss it now, because we need to get into it. We have a lot to get through.
Oh, because you have so many notes.
I have way too many notes. It's between my phone, because I read it on the train. So when I read books, I take notes on my phone, which I hate. But then when we watch movies, I take physical notes on paper, which I prefer, because I can see them easier. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do double
duty.
You're doing double duty right now.
No, I'm doing nothing. I'm just
sitting
here.
Very relaxed.
It's really great to not take notes.
I'm sure. Well, enjoy this one and bear with me, everyone. Okay, so let's start with the book because it came first. And also, just as a preface, I guess, I was going to discuss it later, but we'll compare and contrast, but like at the end, I don't know your opinions, but I'm going to come out front and say it. I like the book a lot better than the movie.
Okay.
But the movie was great. It wasn't amazing, but it was great. However, my takeaway was I still felt like for a short story, there was more to it than the movie. Like,
well, for sure, because the book itself covered a year and had a lot more character development. This was actually probably fewer words and a really condensed version of this.
It's just
book.
Kind of funny because it's a feature film adapted from a short story. You would imagine that's a chance to like fill it out and really add more. But yeah. I felt like it was the opposite, which my point being that it speaks to kind of the abilities of Stephen King, that in a short story, he can still manage to do a better job than a feature film trying to tell the same story.
Didn't he write the screenplay?
Even if he did, I will still say his short story was better. Mm. Cycle of the Werewolf, it opens up in a snowstorm in January, which
yes.
I love because at the beginning of every chapter, it's the header of, the month.
Yeah, it starts with, it's only 12 chapters. So, you know, right from the beginning, you're going to read January through December.
Yeah, which was so cool because mm-hmm. you knew, and each one, there was only one chapter that was a little longer, like maybe 6 or 7 pages, but most of them were like 3 pages.
Pretty brief, yeah.
Yeah, real brief with really killer illustrations. And so it starts with January. It's a snowstorm. We're in Tarker's Mill, which is yet another fictitious place in Maine in the Stephen King universe, mm-hmm. which I think would be really cool to see somebody direct a movie like using all the fictitious places of Stephen King. He's a railroad worker. His name's Arnie, and he's trying to keep warm in this like wooden tool shack in the middle of a snowstorm.
Isn't he with other people? Or
no,
is it
he's just by
him?
Himself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so
oh, right.
he's in there, and then this dog attacks a door, and he's like, oh, I don't want to leave the dog out because it's so cold, but I don't know if I should let it in.
It's like scratching at the door.
Yeah, because it sounds kind of violent. But then it breaks it open, and surprise, it's a werewolf. And
not a dog.
And it eats him. And the cycle of the werewolf
well,
has begun.
That's awkward.
It's a really cool opening.
Yeah, it
so,
is.
So I think instead of going through the whole book and then the whole movie, I think we should just go back and forth between it because it follows it. I don't know. What do you want to do?
I don't think that makes any sense because the movie doesn't involve a year.
Okay, well,
and
then
the,
they're
different stories.
So then you'll already know the story, I guess, and we'll get to the ending. Maybe we should discuss this prior to hitting record.
Let's open it up.
Sure. We're winging it. Then, okay, well, we'll stick with the book then.
I would, yeah.
Okay, we'll go to February then. It's a month later. Stella Rudolph is this kind of, she's just a chubby, lonely woman is basically all she is how she's described, that writes fake Valentine's Day cards to herself. From celebrities.
I felt so bad for her. Also, the illustration for this chapter was my favorite of the whole book.
Which one was it?
It's just her face, and she looks sort of like a, I don't know, like a 1940s or 50s, like, noir, film noir.
Oh,
kind of
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do remember that.
So good.
She writes celebrity Valentine's Day to herself, and some of them are really fun, like from
John Travolta.
Paul Stanley from Kiss. Then the wolf arrives. The wolf arrives at her shop because she runs a shop, and she thinks it's this, like, dream man, and she's like, finally. He's come to me in my dreams. It's a really weird chapter.
Apparently, she's just so lonely, she's nuts.
Yeah, and she's delusional, but then the delusion breaks in and tears her apart, and she's dead. This is where I wrote, I love the illustrations. Also, I wrote, why did it matter that she was described as fat? It had, like, no bearing on anything.
And I think it was just a little subtle jerk jab from Stephen King.
Maybe, yeah. He is extremely skinny, and he was doing a lot of coke then. And
I don't approve.
I just wrote, I guess, only overweight people are lonely, and skinny people are never lonely.
Nope.
That's the moral of the story.
Obviously. That's how the world works, right?
March. So at the beginning of the book, it's really cool. Oh, at the beginning of each chapter heading, it's got the month.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's got a black and white kind of woodblock illustration of a landscape,
like,
for
the
season.
Mm-hmm.
And then it does the main illustration, which is the plate, like a full color plate.
From the chapter.
Really cool, like comic style art. Which he was, the illustrator was a comic artist. And then
there's only one that I laughed out loud at. We'll get there.
I'm sure. And then at the end of each chapter, there's kind of the little chapter closer, small illustration that's like an item from the chapter, you know, like a firework or a pair of glasses or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more kind of that C.S. Lewis style chapter illustration that you
like a little tidbit.
Yeah, it's real cool.
Chapter tidbit. That's what I call it.
So then we get to March. We meet Milt, I think is his name.
You know, Milt.
Milt. He's a librarian and he's a total asshole to his wife.
Wait, is this the shortened version of, like, the nickname of Milton? Like,
I would assume so.
Milton Bradley? Or Mildred?
He's a really strange character. He's like... okay. Just have a moment.
Mildred.
And he's just strange because he's really verbally abusive to his wife and physically abusive. She spills coffee and the storm causes this town, this like power outage that's townwide.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scream outside and this is happening while the husband is like verbally abusing his wife. So he's setting up that we should hate this guy.
He deserves, which, obviously,
yeah,
to die.
I really didn't have a problem hating him. But then later there's this drifter that's found frozen kind of in terror, which I liked. His,
yeah,
like, arms
it was a
are
cool
up,
illustration.
In the snow, in a pool of his own blood.
Yuck.
That's the thing about the book that I loved more than the novel, or than more than the movie that we'll get to, is the book had, the movie had really great kill scenes, but the book had really creative kill scenes.
Uh-huh.
And I loved this one. The idea of an image stumbling across a man frozen in terror, sitting in a pool of his own blood was so great.
Yeah.
Such a great visual. We also get introduced to a bunch of the locals. So he's starting to kind of introduce the locals in the town, who they, you know, like what shops they own and stuff.
Yeah. It's not very important either. I mean, just kind of beyond knowing who it is when they die.
True. True. I thought that too, but then I thought it's nice because it's a short story. Yeah. You're feeling like it's a little bit more involved than it really needs
sure.
to be. I also feel like I'm going to be talking a lot in this episode.
Yep, I'm going to just stare and blink.
You'll say really witty things at really opportune times. So, or you'll spill your drink when you're readjusting in your chair.
Whatever.
So we're on to April. Spring's coming. We meet more locals like Reverend Lowe, who is the...
He's the owner of Lowe's Hardware.
Yeah. That's the namesake.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of input I was hoping for in this episode.
I know. I'm so good.
Reverend Lowe is the local pastor of the church. We meet some other people like Chris Ridingston, who's a local drunk, and a bar girl named Elise Fournier, who we don't get in the movie, unfortunately. But I did like this development that they were like creating these characters. Elise has a crush on the Reverend in the book. She thinks he's like hot stuff.
He's the bee's
knees.
And
then we see that the town is aware that they're being hunted every month.
Mm-hmm.
This is another thing that I really liked about the book is they were pretty self-aware pretty quickly that clearly somebody is hunting them.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's like, oh, it's a werewolf right away. But it does happen that they like start to put together that it is on full moons that these bad things are happening.
And I like that. I think that was cool. And I would prefer that because clearly like people are being butchered.
On full moons.
And they should probably talk about that.
Probably. Get together. Town meeting.
That'd also in April, this is a big month, we see...
Yeah, it's my birthday month.
Right. We open up onto a character named Brady Kincaid. He's a boy that's out flying a kite with others, but he kind of loses track of time because he's so into his kite.
Well, I mean, simple minds, right?
His kite even had a name. It was like, this is a big deal.
Blue Lightning.
It wasn't Blue Lightning.
Tropical Breeze.
Nope. Check your notes. It's in there somewhere.
Yeah. Here, let me sort through it.
And?
Hold on.
And don't just crumble my paper.
Oh, yep. There it is. The Fart.
The Fart is the name
That's
of
That's all skate. I came up with. I'm sorry.
Okay, so...
There's too much pressure.
He's out flying the fart and loses track of time. Werewolf comes. And the next day they find the boy headless and disemboweled. Like, this was the most brutal killing of all, and it was to a little boy. The kite is still in his hand, which I love. It's, like, still flying attached to his hand.
Although the illustration... In the illustration, it's just a werewolf walking with a kite.
I know. Is that the one that you were thinking of? That one made me laugh.
That was funny, though.
One thing that I loved is the end line is so Stephen King. This is really beautiful. The end of this chapter, it says, he's talking about the kite, and it says, it flutters as if it knows this will be a good day for kites.
Ooh.
That's what the kite is thinking. It's so, so great.
It's like the
river. It's also really horrific. Like, this chapter is pretty gruesome.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to May, the better month. And
because it's your birthday.
Mm-hmm. And Reverend Lowe has just left his hardware store.
So casual.
And he has a dream that he... And his whole congregation transforms into werewolves. Mm-hmm. They start, and then eventually he transforms. Mm-hmm. And then he wakes up. And then he goes to church, and he finds that the janitor's dead. Poor janitor.
Aww.
So the werewolf every month is, like, going to town.
Yep.
Fair game. And we go to June. Did you like, side story, did you like that it was broken up in 2 months?
Yes, because I was reading that between, like, parenting and the kids, like, needed stuff. And I'd be like, wait till I get to the next chapter. So I kind of knew that I was short distances. So I was able to read in little spurts and not feel like I was breaking a line of thought because I was reading it after school and stuff. So
yeah, I found that I really prefer this style because... I often read on the train and on the bus from the train to my work and then back and forth. And if it's a long chapter, I will kind of be like, ugh, I don't have time for this. Mm-hmm. Or I'll start to forget where I was.
Mm-hmm.
But with this, I found I was reading more because I was like, oh, I can just get through one more chapter real quick. And by the time I had just gotten off the morning train, I was already halfway through the book.
Oh, yeah.
And then by the time I got home, I was done. Whereas normally the same size book I would drag on because I'd be like, ah, I don't know if I can get to it right now. And so...
Yeah, this is really like just an easy afternoon read.
Also, it's compelling because you're like, we're in June already. What's happening? And you want to know where it's going. So, June... Alfie is wiping the counters down in his restaurant. He's like a bar owner, or not a bar owner, but a restaurant owner. And he's reminiscing about losing his virginity in the back of a car.
Mm-hmm. This is seemed very Stephen King to me.
Very. And I actually liked this chapter a lot because even though I was reading it, I'm like, what? Then I realized like, whoa, I'm getting way more in depth to the character and
the
world.
Yeah, it's not just a kill.
Yeah, it's not just a kill. Like the first kind of couple
words. Oh, spoiler. Alfie dies.
Right. Well... He's this big, like, Navy vet, and he decides to grab a six-pack and go to the drive-in, which, oh, do you remember drive-ins? Did you do drive-ins?
I did a few. I mean, I didn't have a ton of opportunities living in small-town Montana, but I did go to, you know, a handful of drive-ins.
Did we discuss this, or was this an episode that got cut? Did we discuss drive-ins? Because that was my first movie, was a drive-in. E.T.
That's cool. Oh, yeah, that is cool.
And I love drive-ins. And when I read this part of the book, I was so nostalgic for it. And I thought, man, grabbing a six-pack and going to see like a double feature of like B-movies, we would have done that nonstop in college if it was still a thing.
Yeah. Do you remember, I think it was in, when we lived in Wyoming, somebody had like an inflatable screen and they were doing that like out in pastures?
No, kind of. It's a shout out to Chase, my former band member. He started like a makeshift drive-in and did it, like legit did it. He found a field and had a screening and did like, I think like little radios or something. I had to miss it because I was doing something. I think I was out of town on a work trip and it went really well, but he tried to do a little pop-up drive-in theater and I loved that.
You know what would be smart is to do like a podcast pop-in. So you could, like, download it and be like, everybody start in 3, 2, 1. And then it could play on your phone in your car while you watched it.
Oh, that'd be fun. Okay. We should. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Well, we're in
a Starbucks.
Much better. What?
I don't know. I feel like doing those two things and you'd bet you'd bound to make some money,
they
right?
They would sponsor it. So he's this Navy buff and he wants to go to drive-in, but right away somebody walks in and all I thought was he wants to do the drive-in while it's a full moon.
Mm-hmm.
I come on. You already know people are like brutally killed.
He was saying that he wasn't afraid.
Right.
Because he's big dude.
Yeah.
And also he didn't care.
Right.
Because he thought it was a bunch of malarkey.
Yeah. Bullshit artist.
Even though everybody was dying. Whatevs.
So then a regular walks in and asks for coffee. And he turns around to see in the reflection of the coffee jug, like the stainless steel coffee jug, this person transform. This was a really cool scene in the book. And then Alfie's dead. So
yeah,
we know it's a local.
Yeah. Well, he said, too, like, he recognized his regular, although the regular was normally in the mornings, but didn't give away the name nor the gender of the werewolf.
Yeah, but he was like, there's no way it would be this person kind of idea. So, yeah.
But I was at that point kind of hopeful that the werewolf would be a lady.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I figured it out from right away.
Oh,
like,
well.
Yeah.
Aren't you the king of the world?
Well, I was taking notes the whole time.
I thought it was going to be the wife. The wife who'd been abused.
Oh, that would have been interesting.
It would have been better, I'm just saying.
Oh, because her husband gets a great death coming up.
Clearly, I'm a better writer than Stephen King.
Right. So, Alfie's dead. We go to July. We meet Marty, who's a 10-year-old boy in a wheelchair.
Marty. Short for Martin. So you know.
And he's really pissed that they canceled the 4th of July. His wheelchair is super fast.
Were you disturbed by how much he was into the 4th of July? I was like, calm down, 10-year-old.
No, I kind of liked it because he was saying that, like, he's wheelchair bound. He doesn't get to do a lot of the things that the kids do in winter. And so 4th of July was one of the few things that he could really participate in and looked forward to all year. And they were going to cancel it, and he felt like it was kind of a personal offense.
But, you know, like, people dying seems reasonable.
Right. I don't know. I didn't mind at all.
Oh, I was annoyed and thought he was a big old weirdo.
He was a weirdo, but so was his uncle, Uncle Al, who sneaks him fireworks and decides, like, well, you're going to still have your 4th of July. You just sneak out at night with a wheelchair.
Yeah. Yes, boy in a wheelchair in a town where people have been murdered at night.
And
on full moons.
Shoot fireworks without waking anybody up. This is a brilliant plan.
Well, his Uncle Al's a nut.
It's a character.
And I will say the casting is spot on in the movie.
Perfect.
We'll get to it.
So the werewolf appears and Marty throws a firework, like shoots one into his eye. And then it runs off.
This was the illustration that I stopped reading and just laughed until I cried. Because it's just a little boy in a wheelchair, and it's kind of poorly rendered. It looks kind of like an adult hand shooting, and like it looks like red dots flying at a giant werewolf. And
yeah.
It's just so bad. It's hard to even explain, but it put me over the edge.
Marty is, he runs off, or like the werewolf runs off. Obviously, Marty doesn't. And
yeah, it's so rude of you to bring it up.
And he is sent to go with his aunt and uncle in Vermont because they don't want him around because there's somebody killing.
For the rest of the summer.
Right.
Because the parents believe him that he saw something.
Yeah.
And this is kind of when the town is like, oh, yeah, maybe we all do agree that it's possibly a werewolf.
Well, he's the first to see and survive
yes.
so far. And so he's kind of the survivor, and that's why they send him off. Then we go to August. We meet Constable Neary, who's a small town cop in a barbershop, who thinks that the boy was totally full of it. He's really going on and on about that. And that mm-hmm. it's just a killer. Like, he's a psychopath, basically.
Yeah.
And later that night in his truck, when he's like sitting there, the beast uh-huh. comes and rips off half his face and then just brutally kills him.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of my favorite illustrations, which is the werewolf reaching in
yeah,
and grabbing the jaw
one.
And like tearing it off. Oh, so cool. Really gross. Really awesome.
Well, and it's like you can see his teeth through the torn
which is
skin.
Described in the book. And so the illustration really,
yeah.
you know, does it. And then in September, there's a librarian that puts, the librarian is that guy, what was his name? Milt? Milton.
Mm-hmm. Short for Mildred.
He puts his wife in the hospital with a broken nose, which is, I mean, like, yikes.
Do you really have to be hospitalized for a broken nose?
Well, I think he, like, beat her down, and then she said, oh, I fell down the stairs or something like
okay.
that, which would have led to her being the werewolf. Would have been a really cool twist.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a farmer who hears pigs squeal and finds that all of his pigs are dead.
And he didn't go help them.
No, but the art in this one is really amazing, too. It's all these, like, severed pig heads and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And, like, bones.
Yeah.
Lots of pig bones.
But this is really cool because the farmer is like, enough is enough. We're going to hunt this thing down. We're not going to just sit mm-hmm. around letting it pick us off.
It's
which
posse
I really
time.
Liked. Yeah, and the story's developing. October, Marty's back. He's come back from the summer. They've decided because the werewolf has only killed like some pigs and stuff
and
for a couple months.
And they thought maybe a deer, but people were like, maybe he moved on. Maybe it's something
yeah.
different.
So Marty comes back. He dresses up as Yoda
obviously.
And goes trick-or-treating with his dad. He knows who the killer is.
Only after this night.
Right.
He didn't know leading up to it.
No, but he, because somebody opens the door,
mm-hmm.
and it's Reverend Lowe.
Of Lowe's Hardware.
And he hands some wrenches and some screwdrivers as
just
treats.
A handful of screws,
yeah.
drops them in the bucket. Oh, let's be those people this Halloween, just like, here are some nails.
Yeah,
no,
that's
good. I would probably go to jail.
And he's got an eye patch. That's how he knows, you know, the person who, like, survived would have had an eye patch. We're on to November, and the hunters are going out to get him. The Reverend hears about it and heads to Portland.
Yeah, so the hunters aren't after
Maine. Not obviously not Oregon.
Yes, they're headed to get the werewolf. They don't know who the werewolf is, just because what's his name? The kid.
Marty.
Yeah, Martin. Okay.
No. Yeah, they know They're looking for him, and they also waited until November because there would be snow and they could track him easier because they put it off. And
follow those footprints.
Yeah.
So, and they have dogs, too.
This is where we find out that the Reverend decides this is God's will. And then Marty is sending him notes that saying things like, just kill yourself.
Get it over with, bro.
Like kids do. But he doesn't...
Imagine his parents, like, come in and he's writing that note and they're like, what?
Whoa, school project. And so he doesn't know it's Marty, though. And I like that because when he's a werewolf, he's out of it and he can't remember. He woke up and just had this blown out eye.
Yeah, the Reverend is kind of pieced together that he is the werewolf at this point. But he doesn't remember it. He knows that he heals rapidly, that he has all these weird injuries, but they're not really a problem, and that he always feels best around the full moon. So he pieces it together, that, and I'm guessing that dream.
Which I loved in the book, that the idea that this was almost like a disease that just came upon him starting at the beginning of the year in January. And we don't know, we have no backstory as to how he became a werewolf.
No, there was.
Was there?
Yeah, he said at one point that he went up and he picked some flowers and then the flowers turned black.
Oh, okay.
And so there's a sense that maybe it was the flowers.
Okay, well, it's not really like, it's not heavy in the book. And I just like the idea that he's kind of at the mercy of it and discovering through the course of the book what he's becoming. I think that's really cool.
And then he kind of rationalizes it because he doesn't obviously want to kill himself. And he also feels super good when he's a werewolf. So he's like, this is God's will.
Yep.
And is trying to justify this situation.
Yeah. And so he decides, though, to get out of town because all the hunters have, like, put together a vigilante group. And
Posse.
He holds up at this, like, dive hotel where the librarian, Milt, happens to... You know what'd be
Milt
great is if it's not Milt, and I just keep saying the word Milt.
Mm.
I think it is Milt.
So if I were going to start a posse off subject, but kind of on the same subject, I would call us the Very Important Posse, and we'd be the VIPs.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. And so we see that Milt is having an affair on his wife, like with this woman, random woman. And
I thought it was a prostitute.
Was it? Whatever.
Nope. Sex worker.
Okay. And the werewolf's there and takes this opportunity to just knock off his head.
Yeah. And it does in the book discuss how it's just kind of like crazy that the werewolf happens to be in a different town, but still kills somebody from, what is it, Tarkard's Mill or whatever.
Yeah. And so this is when he decides, maybe I should figure out who's writing me these notes.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to, like, start to do it. And then we get to December, the final month in the book. And there is this interesting line. I wish I had the book in front of me. I don't, because I wanted to read it. But it's basically a synopsis in December, like, so-and-so is happening, and this is happening. And then Stephen King does this really, like, nonchalant, so-and-so's dead, and so-and-so's still dead.
Oh, it goes over the year.
Yeah, it's so funny. Mm-hmm. It's really dry humor. And then Marty signs the note. He sends him a note, another note, and signs it, which was interesting.
Yeah.
And
it's real bold for a 10-year-old in a wheelchair.
Yeah, or just a 10-year-old. And
I mean, he's a 10-year-old in a wheelchair who obviously can't outrun
a werewolf.
Well,
we'll find in the movie adaptation.
Wow.
Perhaps he can outrun it.
Yeah.
And then he knows the werewolf's going to come. He convinces his Uncle Al to give him silver bullets, and he gets the bullets made because Al was this Vietnam vet. Also, here's one, my only gripe, really, with the whole entire book. This is just a personal gripe.
Mm.
Stephen King says Uncle Al was a Vietnam vet and won these medals, but you don't win medals, you earn medals.
Them.
Yes, so that was just a little like, maybe shouldn't wrote that. And then Reverend Lowe comes.
Wait, maybe the medals were from military, really, like, foot races.
Like, well, track, like, and field
when they were bored in Vietnam.
Okay.
Between surviving.
Yeah, right. And then Reverend Lowe comes, there's this whole, like, big thing, and Then Marty shoots him, and the werewolf changes back, and that's the end of the book.
Well, that's really anticlimactic.
It's pretty quick. I mean, it's a novella.
He's, like, with his uncle. There's, like, a werewolf bursts into the room through the big picture window.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents come running downstairs. Like, it's a big deal. It's a big scene.
So let's now switch to Silver Bullet, which is 1985. And it's a couple years later because yep, 83 to 85.
Those years.
Those are 2 years. That's a couple. Otherwise, yep. If it was more, it'd be a few.
A pair of years.
Yep.
Twin years.
It's a bundle.
Nope.
How much is a bundle?
8.
Okay. So it's not a bundle. It's a pair. It's twin years.
Not the fruit.
And so we open to not a winter storm. Not even winter.
Nope. It's never going to be winter.
Like the spring or something like that.
Something.
But we open to a killer
death scene. Oh, it's literally a killer.
So good. Arnie, who is the like train worker that dies at the beginning of the book, is drunk and walking around in nice weather.
On a train track.
Yeah. And the werewolf just comes and like, I just wrote bitch slap decapitation was the best way I could describe it.
He
just no slap, lead up.
Slaps that head off.
Just slap that thing. Slap it good. And off goes the head. And then we get this great scene in the next day, which is kind of like the scene in Hereditary where it's like the next day.
Oh, the rotten head.
Yeah, the head's just sitting there. And
with the ants crawling on it.
Yeah, it was really gross. This is the opening scene of the movie, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Here we go.
I have seen this movie a few times, but I've not seen it since I was a teenager, probably. Mm-hmm. This is your first time, right?
I had never seen anything but one tiny scene I recognized. I probably saw it on TNT or
right.
Whatever, USA.
Joe Bob Briggs. Did you read the book as a kid?
Nah.
Okay. But you've read some Stephen King when you were younger, right?
Yeah, like when I was a teenager, I read a couple.
But okay, but not this one.
I'm not like a Stephen King person. He's fine.
Yeah.
No problems with him. I just haven't sought out much work.
Okay, so I had read the book and I had seen this movie, but I just didn't remember a lot of the movie. It started to come back a little bit, but from this opening scene now, as an adult and a horror fan, I thought, oh, this is going to be good. This is a great opening scene.
I love
scene.
Knowing that your mom was cool with you watching that.
My mom was not cool with that. Do you really think my parents knew I was watching Silver Bullet?
No.
I would sneak it like I did with everything. And so then after that, we see it spring, not winter. And surprise twist, it's told from Marty's sister's perspective,
which is a very strange choice considering that she is a low-level character in this
not in the movie.
Yes.
And who is she?
You
straightened your posture.
I did. It is Anne from the original Anne of Green Gables. I think her name's something Follows, but holy guacamole, when you've got Anne of Green Gables in your movie, you are cooking with gas, my friend.
Okay.
Is Anne.
There you go.
That in my childhood daydreams, I'm Anne. I was, in my own childhood, looking for my Diana. Didn't find her.
Sorry. And? But you found me.
I did.
Diana.
Well, you're my Diana and my wife. It's okay.
Yeah. Good. I'll take it.
Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I'll take it. It seems complimentary.
I feel like, when was Anne of Green Gables written?
I don't know. I'm going to say 82.
I don't know when the series was started. However, I know that the series movies were made in the 80s, and perhaps I should make you watch all 49 episodes.
I actually have a fun fact about that. Made in 85, same year as Silver Bullet. So this young actress was
broke.
On fire.
She broke hard in 85.
That cooking with fire was going up.
Yes, and she plays the older sister to none other than mouth actor Corey Haim.
Corey Haim is our lead Marty, who has the most bitchin' wheelchair. Which is not in the book. I thought it was an electric wheelchair, like with a little joystick that you'd just going around.
So.
No, in the movie, it's like a go-kart meets a motorcycle with like a throttle and you like rev it up.
Full gas situation.
Yeah, it's like a lawnmower on the back engine and you just like take off. Dude.
And he's able to later, spoiler alert, race a car.
So, I would have loved it.
No helmet either. Whatever.
You know what I thought would have been really cool, a little crossover of 80s films?
What?
Is that he peeled out and it left fire trail behind his tracks and then he was known as Marty McFly.
Hmm, that would have been
but
weird.
It didn't happen.
Nope.
Another big actor we get for us anyway, because of the world in which we live in, is Reverend Lowe, is Big Ed from Twin Peaks.
Big Ed. Oh,
what a good cast.
And the sheriff in town.
Yeah, Terry O'Quinn, right?
Terry Quinn?
Is it Quinn or O'Quinn?
I don't know.
I don't care.
I don't have notes.
Locke from Lost.
John Locke from Lost.
Who you said, I know who this is because he's so young. You said, it's a comedian. It's a really funny guy.
I don't think I said he's a comedian, but I said he's funny.
And then when you looked it up, you said, oh, wait, nope.
Well, it's because, interestingly enough, young John Locke looks like, what's his name? Will Forte.
He does look like Will Forte.
But like a, I don't know, more compelling eyeballed Will Forte.
Like if Will Forte put an orange in his mouth and then smiled, that's what you'd get. Corey Haim, we've got that. And then, apparently I really wanted to talk about Marty's wheelchair. I think I was slightly jealous because I would have loved this as a kid to cruise around in that.
Every single kid would have. And the wheelchair was made by the uncle also.
Not that one.
Yeah, it was, because remember he delivers it? There's a whole scene.
No, the new one.
Oh, okay.
This, the normal one, maybe he made the normal one too.
He did.
The uncle is played, whose name is not Al in the movie, it's Uncle Red.
Why would they change that?
Who cares? Yeah, that is so meaningless.
You can't call him Uncle Al. You gotta call him Uncle Red.
Gary Busey. No other.
Oh, okay.
Gary Busey, by the way, like, owns this movie. He is so good. I'm not saying this to be like,
well,
I'm not being funny. I'm truthful. He's a great actor in this movie, and he is so great at delivering his lines. I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was pre-accident, pre-brain trauma Gary Busey. Although, it kind of gives you some insight, because Gary Busey, I knew he had like a brain injury, and I wondered how much that had affected him, but
you don't notice it.
It's not quite so much as you might think.
Also, I read that he ad-libbed most of his lines.
I fully believe this.
Fully, they're very Gary Busey lines, mm-hmm. And I wrote a few down later.
Oh, good.
Because they were perplexing, to
yes.
say the least.
Yep.
So Gary Busey's our uncle, Uncle Red, though.
Mm-hmm.
I, like I do with every episode, pretty much have to talk about the composer.
Okay.
This. Wow.
I think the term hot mess comes to mind.
Hot mess is absolutely appropriate. His name is Jay
Chataway. Oh, don't call him out.
Well, I mean, he's a successful composer.
Okay. So maybe this just wasn't his best work.
Hot mess, but I'm still going to defend it. So, Jay Chataway, I looked him up. He did Maniac. He did Missing in Action. He did Maniac Cop. Like, he did really cool movies.
Mm-hmm.
Where I noticed Maniac and Maniac Cop, obviously, is the parts in this film where the score is just incredible are very synth horror 80s, like, you know, like the synth low, like John Carpenter style.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really cool. But then I'm convinced he did not do the whole score and that there was some other musical selection because it was so all over the place.
It felt like a grab bag.
Every scene had its own weird mix where it was like
let's do a trumpet solo here.
Yeah, but it was, and then it was like a square dance hoedown.
And then some synth stuff.
I didn't get it at all.
Nah.
But that opening part, I really loved the synthy horror stuff, obviously, but wow.
Yeah. Okay, so where are we in the storyline of this movie?
I wrote synth horror to inspirational 80s jam to mystical?
I
so
like
we're,
it.
So we're just talking about the score. Silver Bullet, by the way, we find out in this movie, is the name of his wheelchair.
Oh, yeah. It's painted on there.
Mm-hmm. Both wheelchair iterations.
Anyway, I mean, it was silver, so that's good.
Yeah. And it moves fast.
Yep. Like a bullet.
Okay, then we do see that he introduces fireworks. That's good.
It would have been cool if he had killed them with his wheelchair, the werewolf with his wheelchair in this adaptation.
Maybe.
Like, run him over because it's the silver bullet.
Then he gives him the fireworks, and then Corey Haim sneaks out. Conveniently, his upstairs room out of his window has, like, a ladder.
No, it's for, like, a satellite.
Yeah, but it happens to be right next to his room and not anywhere else in the house.
Yeah.
So that was convenient. Mm-hmm. He crawls down into upgraded Silver Bullet, which Uncle Red had created, which is basically just a motorcycle, like tricycle motorcycle. Mm-hmm. Goes very, very fast. And he's cruising, and there's like this road trip montage with like jam road trip music.
And in the book, at least, this kid's 10. So that is like one of our children, approximate age, climbing out of their window in the middle of the night, cruising around in a motorcycle to an abandoned bridge.
Yeah. Although the movie had the abandoned bridge, in the book, he just goes out front into his front lawn. This is the rare spot in the movie, which I thought this makes way more sense, is when he lit off the fireworks in the book, I'm like, that's going to wake up everybody instantly.
Yeah.
I liked it in the movie that he like isolated himself out in the middle of nowhere to light these fireworks. So.
Yeah, I mean, beyond the driving a car, essentially.
Right.
At age 10 into
like
the middle of nowhere.
Three-wheeler.
Yeah.
So he's lighting off the fireworks, and then...
Also, are you troubled by the... He's like, whoa, yeah! But he's on a bridge by himself. That's the saddest thing ever. If I were on a bridge shooting off fireworks, I'd probably just be crying if I was by myself.
Is really sad to begin with. So... The werewolf's creeping around, though, and this music comes back, and it's awesome 80s music again, and I'm, at this point, kind of annoyed. I feel like I'm being pranked.
You're being catfished by the music.
Not being catfished.
Being same thing.
Punked by Ashton Kutcher. He's like, yeah, man, gotcha!
You got punked.
You thought it was a cool score, but it wasn't a cool score. Psych! It was a cool score.
Also, I burned your house down.
Yeah, and I made you cry on camera. So I couldn't get this score at all. Really confused, but I'm still kind of fascinated by it. I want to know the story behind it. So he doesn't get sent away in the movie, by the way. He stays there. He doesn't get sent off with
his own uncle. Yeah, but we first have to talk about how he's attacked on the bridge by the werewolf.
Yeah.
He's not sent away, but first the werewolf does, in fact, attack him, and he shoots its eye out.
Yeah, just like in the book. Also, I noticed that Corey Haim in this movie... It has the same plot line as Lost Boys, where he's battling the supernatural, but nobody believes him. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's got to convince everybody around him.
Yeah. Also,
he just doesn't have the Frog Brothers.
Also, not to be harsh on Corey Haim as a child actor, but I've long noticed that his acting style is to have a slackened lower jaw mm-hmm. and his tongue kind of hanging out. And then,
Yeah. But he was really cute. Mm. So he could get away with it.
Okay. So anyway,
R.I.P.
Was he dead?
He killed himself, remember?
No.
Yeah, didn't he commit suicide? Yeah, it was a sad story.
Oh, now I feel like a jerk for calling him a mouth actor.
You're just making fun of the dead.
He's going to haunt us.
I loved the Coreys in the 80s. I thought they were too cool for school.
Yeah, you wanted to be the third Corey.
Totally wanted to. Yeah. So then. This is an interesting twist from the book also, is in the movie, Jane, the sister, goes around looking for somebody with one eye.
She believes him when he tells her.
In the book...
He confides in her in the movie.
In the book, like we discussed, it's a trick-or-treat. And during the trick-or-treat, Corey Haim's character, Marty, is looking for somebody with one eye. So this is kind of interesting. Also, in the movie... The Reverend, like, knows right away what's going on. He's fully aware of it, knows that her brother, because he's like, say hi to him for me.
Yeah, there's
no And he creeps
no
her
confusion.
Out because she finds him, because she's collecting bottles or something like that.
Yeah, she's collecting bottles for a fundraiser for the church.
So then what we have is the kids telling Uncle what's going on and that they sent letters saying that you should kill yourself, and Gary Busey's really mad, like he is in the book. The uncle's mad too. But this is where Gary Busey's ad-libs really go off the rails.
Okay.
I just wrote, I just couldn't even believe what I heard, and I thought this couldn't have been what he said. Still not sure if it is, but it sounds like it's believable.
Okay.
I just wrote, quote, Jesus pound of meat is what I wrote.
What? And then
I was like, did he say Jesus pound of meat?
I don't know. It does.
You would think no, but I'm going to discuss another quote later that you'll say, oh, yeah, that's definitely what he said.
Okay.
Okay. Then it cuts to the most hilarious and my favorite scene in the whole entire movie, where I almost started tearing up. I was laughing so hard. Corey Haim is in his wheelchair looking really sad, and it's the most tragic, emotional music ever.
It's very emotional.
And he's looking longingly at a baseball game, but it's just the camera is cropped in really close at little kids' legs.
Little boys' legs
as
running.
They're running around. It was so funny.
Oh.
Okay.
Because he can't run.
That happened. And then, I don't know, there's a few other things that happen, but one thing that I, well, I mean...
Stuff happens.
Well, we'll get to it, but one thing that I wanted to back up on is the whole flow of this film compared to the book. If I was to direct it, which I didn't.
Nope.
And I'm not going to remake it, but...
No, please don't.
Wouldn't it have been perfect to do the little, like, title card at the beginning of every month and be like, January... And then you do the scene, and then February, like the book. It was so cool because you know you only have a certain amount of time.
Yeah, but I think this just wanted to be like a totally 80s movie. So we have this like ragtag team of Uncle Red, brother and sister, now stalking Reverend Lowe, one-eyed Reverend Lowe.
Yeah, and speaking of directors, though, of who directed it, there is an interesting story behind that as well that I have for you. So if you didn't notice, if you didn't pick up on this, the movie's pretty good overall. I'd say where it lacks 100% is the costume of the creature.
Oh, yeah.
The bear more than a werewolf.
Okay, that's it's even a stretch.
Really bad. Everybody was pissed about it. Like, it was a big, big deal. And they didn't even know what the werewolf was going to look like, and they had to start shooting. And when they finally saw it, nobody, including Stephen King, was like, this is not, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But they went ahead and had to go through with it because they were so far behind production.
It's unfortunate because in the book, there was so much talk about how the werewolf looked sort of humanoid.
Yeah.
So it really lended itself to just some good makeup.
Yeah, it could have been really cool. But interestingly, with the director, so who the original director was, and I learned this through a podcast that I was listening to recently because they were interviewing the director. And he talked about it, was Don Cascarelli, who does Phantasm, which we know really well because we just went through the entire, all five Phantasms in a row. And he was brought on to direct it, which would have been really interesting. But when he saw there was no werewolf, like, in sight, he said, we have to start shooting something, I guess. And so he started shooting all the non-werewolf scenes and then realized this film was a disaster. And doomed and left. And so that's when they brought in.
He thought this film was a disaster after he was making Phantasms?
Yeah, I mean...
I mean, those have basically no plot.
Right. Okay, I have a counterpoint to this because I knew you were going to bring this up.
You brought up Phantasm,
I was
man.
Listening to another podcast called Shockwaves, and they were talking about Scream 4, which we haven't seen. And, like, the rest of the people on the podcast kind of, like, sighed out loud and rolled their eyes. And he said, the person talking about it said, no, let me defend it because I haven't seen it since it came out. And watching it now, it holds up really well and it fits great with the series. He said, the problem is when you watch a franchise in order, that's a bad thing. And that they were arguing you should never do that because you immediately start comparing to... the other ones, and I agree because we just watched all five Phantasms, and I think if we would have not watched them all five together, maybe I wouldn't have had such strong opinions.
You think that you would have identified any plot
It's not about plot, but I would just have maybe enjoyed them a bit more. Phantasm 1 was cool. Phantasm 2 was very campy. 3 and 4, like, were a absolute disaster. And then 5 came back as kind of like, this is okay, it's salvaging it. However, had we have not watched them, like, every single night, like, let's just get through them, I maybe wouldn't have had the same approach. And so that's what I think about with him directing, is that, like, I don't think he would have done a bad job, but he was saying this film was a disaster and I don't want to be a part of it. Everybody was kind of pissed at this point. They bring on another director who this was ended up being the only feature he ever directed. Mm. He went on to do a ton of TV after this, but never another feature film.
So bringing us back to the all-important topic of the movie, we have Corey looking longingly at legs from a wheelchair. And he's being spied upon by the minister of Lowe's Hardware, who follows him home, like on his way home. And then there's a high-speed chase between Silver Bullet and Pastor Carr.
It is a high-speed chase.
Yeah, and it ends
up... And he's, like, ramming him off a bridge.
Yeah, and it ends up being pretty dramatic, but Corey escapes and the Reverend sneaks away.
Yeah, all of which never happened in the book.
No. Yeah. And yeah, it's only worth a passing note, and it helps to spur on the uncle to talk to the police officer, also known as John Locke in the future. And so John Locke goes to the preacher's house and just decides, I'm going to go ahead and open up the garage and seize the damage from the car chase earlier. But out of the blue comes the werewolf.
Yeah, and the werewolf, right before he kills him, there's this really great scene. Did you write it? You didn't write it down. I wrote it down.
Yeah, I did. I steered it
the
into
werewolf,
my memory.
Like, he's not supposed to talk at all in the entire film.
No.
But he says one line, and it's right here in the movie. Do you remember it?
Mm-mm.
He goes up, he looks at John Locke, and then he reveals a button, and he presses it, and then the room starts shaking, and he says, "See you in another life, brother."
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you didn't remember that? So, sheriff's killed. I like the way the sheriff was killed in the book way more.
Yeah.
This was boring as hell.
Beaten with a bat?
Yeah. This,
whatever.
In the book, he had his face ripped off. It was
awesome. Yeah, I didn't like that at all, because I think the problem with this whole part is that, or this whole movie, is that there's no separation between man and beast, which was emphasized in the book. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's just like he's sometimes a werewolf, but always kind of a cruddy person.
Yeah. And then we get the melting down of the silver. So, by the way, when he's in the gun shop, Gary Busey.
Well, you got to set it up. So Gary Busey goes to the gun shop to melt down silver that Corey Haim and his sister
gave their necklaces
him to make a single silver bullet.
Beautiful montage of the bullet being created.
I know. Did you not want to watch movie about melting
metal? Yeah, it was
metal?
Like a Mr. Rogers segment. I turned to you and said, we need to own a silver bullet, because I was so entranced by this montage.
Yes.
Silver bullet gets created, right? It's melted down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the parents, I guess, have to leave?
Well,
conveniently?
Gary Busey says, I want a romantic trip, but my girlfriend just broke up with me, so you guys got to take it. And he says he's going to have, they take care of the kids and sends the parents away so that it will be him and children and a werewolf
okay.
and a single silver bullet.
Okay. So, yeah, they have one. It's very dramatic. And they're all...
One shot. Literally
one shot. They're all in the house waiting. It's like 3 a.m.
They're all snoozing.
And Gary's like, this is not happening. This is boring. And then guess who's creeping in the window?
Like always.
Old Sniffy McGee. And the daughter sees it and freaks out. And then he busts through, and there's this big to-do where Gary Busey's doing his own stunts. And it's great.
It was him?
Yeah.
Oh. And he was thrown into
He's got stories. And so he gets thrown into a hutch and has stories to tell later, years later. And then he's knocked out. The werewolf's coming. And Corey Haim takes aim. He takes aim and he shoots and he shoots his eye. Both eyes are out. And then we get the worst. Boy, these special effects are rough.
Special effects, yes, they're bad. But I got to talk about the Foley work. You go ahead.
No, go ahead. Please take it.
So as the wear face deflates, it's basically just like balloons under the skin, like pulsating as it shrivels up. But they didn't just stop with balloons under the skin. They just rubbed a balloon for the Foley work. It's like, wah, 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 if you were to rub a balloon and then like maybe squeeze some fruit.
Okay.
It's very strange. And then like it's just kind of hair blowing that's supposed to look like it's receding. It's fingernails maybe retracting. It's all just...
all in reverse, too. It's very obvious. I think... as I was watching this, clearly, like, it's a monster film. Maybe they should have put their money into that. That's what everybody's waiting for.
All the money on Haim.
And Gary Busey. You could have hired Nick Nolte and made a much better creature, don't you think? So, speaking of Gary Busey ad-libs, by the way, we get a really good one for the closer.
Do it.
Yep. He says, "Holy jumped up ball-headed Jesus Palomino." That's the direct quote. They just let him go. I even read that Stephen King was like, "No, it's cool. Let him say whatever." And so that's what we got. Holy jumped up ball-headed Jesus Palomino. So that's where...
I feel like we could all learn a little something here. You can be much more creative in your swears.
Then we get a close off. The final scene. Is this Gary Busey that says this? I wrote the quote, but I couldn't remember because I was laughing so hard. Somebody very dismissively says, "I love you too, Marty. Good night." Oh, it's the voiceover by
the sister. No, yeah. She's like... So at the end, they've defeated
the werewolf. It's like an old woman voice.
They've defeated the werewolf, and it's the voiceover again for the second time in the movie. She introduces us. It's like the older version of the sister. And so it flashes back to baby Corey hugging his sister. He's like, "I love you too." And she's like, "I couldn't say it then, but I can say it now." And first of all, they had a really close relationship. Why couldn't she say it then?
Yeah.
And second of all, who are you talking to, old lady, you know, from the future?
Well, she's about to throw the heart of the ocean off the bow of the ship. So she's telling a story. Do you want to hear it or not?
No. No, thank you.
Yeah, that's when she says, "I love you too, Marty." And then she just says, "Good night." And then a harp starts playing.
Isn't it like a single harp? Or was that earlier when there's just one note?
No,
from
it
a
closes
harp?
With a harp. Trust me. And that's it. That's Silver Bullet.
Okay.
I loved it.
Yeah, like on a scale of 1 to 10, 11, I would watch it again.
I would totally watch it again.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a party movie.
Although I'd probably, like, for sure fall asleep.
What did you think? Let's wrap it up. What did you think of book versus movie?
Obviously, the book's better. I mean, the movie was... It does what a movie's supposed to do. It gives you a story. It's short. It's concise. There's not a lot of, you know, room for development. So they did what they could with what they had. You also have to allot for actors and their personalities and directors and their personalities. And
sure.
Clearly the personalities of Foley artists.
Yeah. I loved the book, not only because I thought the story was just stronger, but also the illustrations were great.
They were delightful,
The style was just so cool. I would read that regularly. I mean, I think it's just a must read. Why not? It's a classic horror book.
It's good.
And it's really well done. Well, that was fun. That was interesting to do a compare and contrast. Hopefully that was made sense. I don't know.
Who cares?
We'll see. If not, blame it on Mariah. She didn't take notes.
Whatever.
And next week, I don't know, 80s? Something 80s? You want to do something 80s?
Maybe.
Okay. You can follow us on
Instagram.
All kinds of places. Yeah, Instagram. At Laser Graves, but you can also subscribe, rate, review on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean at Laser Graves, and then I'm on Instagram at EK Wimmer.
You look like you're asking me.
No, I'm just like trying to go through it all. And it's really repetitive. I want to like record this and just plug it in now.
No.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I'm also on Instagram at Mariah Rose Wimmer.
You looked like you were just asking me.
Am I?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Okay. That's it. That's the information you needed. And I hope you enjoyed it. Okay. See you next week. Bye.
You won't. It's a podcast. You won't ever see them.
See you in your dreams.
You'll hear us next week. Bye.
Listen for the chimes outside your door.
Here's some Foley
work.
That's
me creeping.
It's a balloon.